Misty Winston on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, welcome back to TNT Radio. This is the Misty Winston Show. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Okay, so I'm really excited for our next guest, but before we get to that, let me give you a quick update on some news. So former British MP and broadcaster George Galloway is suing Twitter. I'm very excited about this. As you may remember me discussing on the show when it very first happened 6 weeks ago, he tweeted out that once he was slapped with the label of Russian state-affiliated media, that he was going to be taking legal action against Twitter. He went kind of silent on it after that, and so I was kind of wondering if anything was going to come of it, and it turns out he's on it. So I'm very pumped about this. I think more people need to join him in this effort. So he has taken high court action in Dublin against Twitter for defamation following the labeling of his Twitter account as Russian state affiliated media. He is also claiming in the proceedings that the social media giant unlawfully processed his personal data by labeling and censoring his account. Galloway presented the mother of all talk shows on Radio Sputnik, as well as Sputnik Orbiting the World with George Galloway on RT prior to it being shut down due to British government sanctions in March. The Russian state-affiliated media label had not been applied to Galloway when he was actually presenting those shows on those networks. It only appeared after he stopped. So after his shows were shut down due to the sanctions on the Russian government, then they slapped him with a label, which is just mind-blowingly stupid. But we should also mention, too, that Ed Schultz was slapped with a label, and he's dead. So that's the level that they're going to here. And rest in peace, Ed Schultz. He was fantastic. So Kevin Winters of the Belfast legal firm KRW Law is representing Galloway in the matter. And he said that when asked 6 weeks ago, when the label first appeared, Twitter refused to provide information regarding the choice to label him. Galloway has said of their refusal that it is, quote, unbecoming for a major corporation, not least one which styles itself as the public square, end quote. And he also said, quote, to have attached to my every utterance on football, to family, on politics, to popular music, a completely false statement that my views are Russian state directed is unconscionable and a daily stab to the heart of who and what I am, end quote. So according to Winters, the case is being taken in Dublin because, quote, Twitter contests jurisdiction anywhere else, end quote, and also because Ireland was where the data controller for all EU and UK Twitter accounts are asserted to be. So I'm very excited to see how this plays out. Everybody keep a close eye on this one. I would really like to see other people who have been slapped with this label join him in this effort in some way, or at least show, you know, very wide and public support on this. I have friends who have been slapped with this label. As I've mentioned, Rachel Blevins is from Texas, and her Twitter account has been labeled as Russian state affiliated media. So it's absurd, and it's very interesting the way that it's selectively applied. Currently, it's only Russian and Chinese state affiliated, supposedly state affiliated accounts that are labeled. But, you know, people from MSNBC are not labeled as, you know, US state run media, which they very much are. So again, this will be interesting to watch it play out. I'm super pumped that he's actually going through with this. Kudos to him for going through with it. And hopefully he will be able to fight back on this effectively. And then also I wanted to talk about too, because I think this is hugely important. So the smoking gun video proving U.S. involvement in the 2014 coup in Kiev has been removed from YouTube, just quietly disappeared after 8 years of being available. So this was reported today by independent outlet Consortium News. Shout out to them. They do great work. And it appears as if the most complete version of the intercepted and leaked conversation between then Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland and Jeffrey Pyatt, the then U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, in which the two of them in this video discuss who will make up the new government weeks before democratically elected Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych was overthrown. There was a violent coup February 21st of 2014 in which he was overthrown. So the State Department, the U.S. State Department, has never denied the authenticity of this video. And in fact, they had to issue an apology to the EU following its release due to Nuland's comment that she made in there, basically saying F the EU. So it's an authentic video. I think that's very clear. Everybody is very sure of that. But suddenly it has just been removed and, you know, just been disappeared. So obviously the timing of this is incredibly suspect, given the situation in Ukraine right now. And we've seen mainstream media doing a desperate dance around trying to, they've been desperately trying to dance around covering the reality of the situation in Ukraine and the West's involvement in it, everything from NATO expansion to the coup in 2014. So it's very interesting to see that they are now just disappearing videos and evidence of that. And it's very disturbing. I mean, they are essentially rewriting history in real time. And this is just, again, another attempt at narrative management and narrative control, something everybody needs to be paying attention to. Kudos to Consortium News for being on top of this, for being able to catch that this video disappeared. Just so everybody knows, if you would like to read the transcript, Consortium News, Joe Loria, in the piece that I mentioned, where they're covering this video being removed, he has the transcript in that article. And also, I think Scott Horton has since tweeted out at least some of the audio of it. I'm not sure if it's the entirety of the audio of the video, but Scott Horton has tweeted out some of the audio of the conversation that was had. So if you want to go and check out the entire transcript, you can go to Consortium News, and then also you can check out, I think Scott Horton on Twitter is at Scott Horton Show. So you can go there and check out the audio if you're interested. Highly recommend it, and maybe download it just in case they decide to disappear it as well. Okay, so that's all I have for the news for you right now. And this is TNT Radio.
Abroad or at home, this is your news.
By staying silent, we are part of the problem.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. I am so pumped. I am so pumped to introduce our guest for this hour. We are joined now by my homie and my partner in organizing, Andrew Smith. Andrew is the founder of the activism group Action for Assange, of which I am a member. And he was also the co-host of our online vigil series of the same name, but has been on hiatus recently, as have I, been busy. But he's one of the originals, one of the OGs. He's also one of my favorite people on earth, and he's a beast on a megaphone. There's nobody better on a megaphone at a protest. Hey, Andrew. Andrew, thanks for being here, dude.
Thanks, man. Thanks for inviting me. I'm excited to talk to you. We haven't done a show together in so long. It's crazy.
I know. I miss you.
Is my audio and everything good? I don't want there to be any background noise. Okay, cool. Cool, cool, cool.
No. You sound great. You sound fine. Totally good. Totally perfect. Okay, so awesome. Let's talk about Action for Assange, because cool. That's kind of how we met. So tell everybody how you got started in Action for Assange, what inspired you to create it.
Yeah, so when Julian first got arrested in April 11th of 2019, I went to DC, and there were protests outside of the embassies, but I had viewed the world of Occupy and where people just go and issues don't go away. It's not something that you leave the protest site. And I had gotten there late and I had actually missed the people that were there. So I had messaged my friend and he said that everyone had already headed home for the day. Which happens, people have lives and stuff. But that gave me basically an entire drive to DC and then drive home thereafter to think about what the heck was going on. And this was, mind you, at the same time as the Venezuelan embassy siege. I think it was right around that same era, if I have my timeline straight in my brain. but it essentially started out as like a thought puzzle. I was just trying to figure out what I, as a human individual, can do to work to secure the freedom of Julian Assange. Like, at the time, I didn't have a platform. There was nothing. It was literally just me. So I started hanging posters, and I put them absolutely everywhere. Like, if there was a telephone pole in the county that I was in, I had probably put a poster on it that said Free Assange or Free Chelsea Manning, because at the time she was in jail too. And I had just posted it on the internet. I had actually built a thread underneath one of Caitlin Johnstone's informational pieces talking about why Julian had been arrested and the charges that were out at the time. And one thing led to another, and I ran into Mark Lubbers, and he invited me on to Anonymous Bites Back, which is where Taylor and I, who at the time was a Kent State student, did an interview together. We met up in person a couple weeks later and said, like, hey, let's do this. Like, let's do this together, because she had a journalism background and me as a activist and at the time member of the Green Party, had been in political activism mostly from the time that Bernie Sanders was running for office originally forward, so like 2016. So I was still a little bit young in activism, but I had been you know, I had gone through the motions and know how to organize people because it was just what I had done for the last 3 years. So her and I put our two skills together, and we were going around putting up posters, but the idea was that we would get other people to do whatever they could. So we went and postered Kent State absolutely everywhere, and it eventually grew into the point that we started a show. It was me, Taylor, at the time Christy, and Steve Poikinen with Slow News Day, and I don't know what the name of his show is right now, but Slow News Day. Most people will know him if they know you. Yeah. And then, and one thing turned into another. We had some people change out. I met you in person for the first time at a Jimmy Dore show, and you had already been following what me and Taylor had been doing, so that was cool. And then it evolved from there into basically just a decentralized organizing effort that's still going on. Like, even with us breathing right now, there's still people actively involved in every aspect of it. And it's more or less just getting people to do what they can, whether it's the Denver crew or the Baltimore crew that has their own events, or Alex around the world with the Candles events, but pulling supporters together, because the one thing that really happens is censorship online. It's really hard for one Assange's supporter to not only know, but trust the other people in the international organizing scene, because you don't know who's going to Germany. Like, you don't know the random street people of Germany that care about issues.
Right.
But through the work of Action for Assange, Candles for Assange, we've been able to connect those groups to show, like, literally global support in a way that I don't think really has been represented for any other issue, except maybe climate change. So that's the, I mean, that's the short of it. And it's been a crazy ride. Just everything we've managed to do over these last 3 years has just been insane.
Yes. Yeah. And as Andrew said, we met in person at a Jimmy Dore show in Chicago. Him and Taylor were there. They were, you know, handing out bracelets and information. And we had like a mini protest kind of while everybody was waiting in line to enter the show. And I had started following, because Action for Assange kind of started up right as the Unity for Jay, which was another online vigil series that was kind of winding down. And I was really sad to see that go, because I thought it was a really necessary effort. And it was a really strange time for it to be ending. So I was really bummed about that. And then when I heard about Action for Assange, I was one of the first followers of the Action for Assange Twitter page. Yep. And I was really pumped. I was so excited you were going to be there. I like ran up to Taylor and was like really weird, because that's, you know me, that's how I am. I'm weird and awkward. So I ran up to her and I'm like, I'm so excited you're doing this. Thank you so much. I want a bracelet and blah, blah, blah. And it ended up that, I mean, we had all followed each other on Twitter for some time. We were all kind of mutuals. So it was really cool to meet them in person. They ended up
the like Bernie Sanders and progressive movement at the time too.
Yeah.
Like I was just saying, that's how we met originally, was fighting for healthcare and for regulation of big pharmaceutical companies and all those things. And then this issue happened and we all snapped our heads and started running as fast as we could to put the fire out, I guess you could say.
Yeah. No, that's so true. It was kind of weird. Like we all, you know, we were all activists in some form or another. Myself, I was highly unfocused. I really hadn't found like a cause that I was super duper. There was things that I'm passionate about and that I wanted to work on. But for whatever reason, the Assange thing really like snatched me up. And it became instantly like my thing. And so it was interesting that we all kind of gravitated towards that at the same time. But yeah, Taylor and Andrew sat behind my husband and I at the show, and I got drunk. And Andrew was like, you should come on the vigil. And I'm like, yeah, I'll totally do that. And then when I sobered up, I realized I had just agreed to be on somebody's show, and I really didn't want to do that. But if you know Andrew, Andrew was persistent. It took him some time. But I did end up appearing just first as a guest on the Action for Assange vigil. And then I think that turned into me coming back as a guest again. And then I think I was a guest host at one point for a few times. And then I just never left. I just became part of the crew.
That sums it up perfectly, basically, because you were always there.
Yeah.
And I don't want to take credit for it, but I want to say that we were like the first camera interviewer, one of the first that you actually did.
You were.
And then, yep. Yeah. So
You, so whatever, I tell people all the time that
Misty
if you
Winston at this time, if it hadn't been for us doing what we did, this wouldn't be happening right now.
I tell people that all the time, Andrew. You say you want more trolls. All of my trolls, I always tell them, if you don't like me, then just blame Andrew. It's his fault. But it's true.
I'm very proud of that, too.
That was the very first camera. And I didn't want to do it. I really did not have any desire whatsoever to really be on camera. I thought about potentially writing. Caitlin Johnstone had encouraged me to write at some point. I have severe ADHD, so it's hard for me to write and stay focused. But she had encouraged me to do that. And I will say that aside from yourself, there were three women that were highly influential in my decision to do this stuff. And that was Caitlin Johnstone, Elizabeth Lee Voss, and Taylor Hudak. They were all incredibly supportive and encouraging. They would send me DMs and all of that stuff, like giving me advice. So that's how Andrew and I met. That's how I ended up joining Action for Assange. And you're right, we have done so much. So much, if you think about it, in just 3 years. It's really kind of crazy. It's nuts.
Yeah, throughout 2020, I think we spent a total of 4 months out of the year, like if you count all of the calendar days and everything like that, with events and protests going on, not nonstop, but just like total as a
right.
group. And 2021 was even bigger than that. But the craziest thing is like all of the other people involved, because like because even with like people, because let me try to word this right. Assange supporters go through a lot. Like Gordon Dimmick has a wonderful video that I would recommend to everyone. Because we all get there, like we all feel that just in the way that we push ourselves and try to accomplish things. And so I just think that like me being gone for a couple months, just trying to get myself and my person right, coming back and literally just seeing everyone still doing everything is so incredible, just because of the amount of effort and time and dedication and just mental strain that you place yourself under.
It is a lot. I don't think people realize, and I'm not like trying to play like activism Olympics here and claim that any one issue is more difficult than another. I'm just speaking from my experience, and I think Andrew would agree that in Assange activism, it is a lot. It's hard. The subject matter that we have to deal with, I mean, learning about special administrative measures, hearing about torture victims, witnessing war crimes on video, all of the stuff that we put ourselves through mentally, day in and day out. It is exhausting. It's mentally draining. It's really hard on your mental health. And not to mention, we're up against the most powerful forces on earth. it's a lot. Go ahead.
The other difficult thing is the like, I don't know, like almost illusionary, I don't know what word, like non-concrete ness of what it means. Like if someone's fighting for healthcare or a minimum wage, like those are things that people feel. Like you would understand what guaranteeing healthcare for everyone means, even if it's not in the way or fashion of one person or another. And same thing with like environmental policy and unionization and all those are like real life, like I feel it in my paycheck,
tangible
like, kind of issues.
It's tangible.
And with Julian's, it's more ethereal because people won't understand the effects of losing freedom of speech until after it's gone. Right. Like
I say that all the time.
I don't know what words I can use, but I'll just call it the vids. Right. After like the vids.
No,
is the
you can say
example.
Andrew, no censorship. Okay. There's no censorship on TNT. None. Zero.
Yeah.
Zero.
Okay. Well, COVID's a perfect example then, because like even just that, like, how do I have to say this to make it okay? Like, people are losing the ability to broadcast. And a lot of times, not a lot of times, but Julian was the first one, right? Like, he was the first, like, one of us that got silenced. And it's just led to more and more censorship and the ability for more and more people to get shut down to the point that, like, a large portion of the country didn't even officially realize or know that like the government's disinformation board was happening until people like doubled down and made sure through every avenue possible that people heard about it, because that's what took it so long to get shut down, or at least paused at this point, was that's how long it took for us to proliferate the information that this was happening. So I think that being able to see effects like that shows, one, how effective the censorship is against us, but also how effective we are against the censorship, because we have all of these different avenues to reach so many people still, where it's not just these major platforms anymore that can blackball us. It's all of these other sites that they may not be as large, but combined are way bigger.
Yeah. I mean, and you're right. We are starting to see a lot more of the, I mean, TNT is a great example. It's a relatively newer platform. And like I said, there's no, I can talk about whatever I want. I can talk openly about vaccines and COVID and globalization and the Great Reset and anything, everything I can talk about at all. But I think what you just said about the freedom of speech stuff, I talk about that all the time. Freedom of speech is a very abstract concept. It's not something that people, that it impacts their everyday life. Like, it's not like, hey, I can't feed my kids today. It's something that, you know, it's really difficult for people to wrap their heads around. You're right, until it's gone. And that's what's so frustrating, is that, you know, we're, not only are we punching way above our weight class, but it's also really difficult to get people to recognize how, why they should care and how it impacts them directly. Okay, we do have to take a really quick break, Andrew, but we're going to be right back with more right here on TNT Radio.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio, or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Hey everyone, TNT presenter Misty Winston here. As you may already know, journalist and publisher Julian Assange is facing extradition and 175 years in prison for doing what journalists all over the world do every day. This case represents the most dangerous threat to press freedom in history. The case now sits in the hands of UK Home Secretary Priti Patel. Please contact her office and encourage her to do the right thing and refuse the extradition request. This case will forever change the future of press freedom. We can't afford to lose.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is TNT Radio, and you are listening to the Misty Winston Show, and I'm super pumped. I'm joined by my friend and partner in organizing, Andrew Smith, and we're just discussing kind of the birth of Action for Assange, which is the organizing group that Andrew started after Julian Assange was arrested from the Ecuadorian embassy. What was it for you? I don't know that I've ever asked you this. What was it for you that kind of, because we mentioned that we all, like you and Taylor and I, all kind of snapped into, you know, paying it, like really paying. I mean, because I had been a casual supporter of WikiLeaks before. I read the leaks, I bought merch, I donated, all of that good stuff. But I really didn't snap into action until he was arrested. And I think for me, it was because I very naively thought, come on, they're not going to actually arrest a journalist. They're going to make him sit there for a long time, and then it'll eventually play itself out, and you know, whatever. And for whatever reason, and I hate myself for it now, for being that stupid and naive. But then once he was yanked out of the Ecuadorian embassy, that was really like a punch in the face. So was it kind of the same for you, or did you, what was kind of your moment where you realized that this was legit?
Well, I agree with all that, because it was literally a neck snap, because like for everything that Julian suffered, he was not free, but he was still publishing, right? Like he was going through all of the UC Global trials, dealing with security forces, not being able to leave the embassy, even though it wasn't officially a prison at that time. It later got ruled that way by the UN Court of Human Rights. But it actually goes back a little bit further for me, as weird as this is going to sound. And it was around the time, like end of 2017, when QAnon started. And this is, you know, everyone has an opinion of it, but I was on the internet. I'm a child of the internet. I was raised on the board, so I was watching what was happening. And I didn't believe it or disbelieve it. I just thought it was interesting. I thought, you know, this is just some bullshit. But after you watched it for a minute, you're like, no, this is a thing. But what the fuck is it? And it was around the time, and I know this is like a long lead up, but when Trump bombed Syria, QAnon said just missiles, right? And the internet just brushed it off. Like, oh, just missiles, whatever. We're just bombing Syria. People died. It was a violation of international law. Trump was already a war criminal just by adoption of the seat of the presidency. But it was like one of the first things you could point to in the public sphere to people that were anti-war, that were on the right, to say, hey, this is wrong.
Right.
And that's where I realized that, hey, this is a psychological operation. Like, this was in 2018. Yep. Not that I was like an anti-QAnon campaigner or some shit, but I just recognized it for what it was. And then around the time that leading up to when Julian was getting arrested, his name had started showing up more, J.A. within the QAnon feeds, which, like, not that it means anything, but they literally just said, like, some shit about, like, Julian something, this is not a game. And he was arrested shortly thereafter. And that's when I realized that there's two sides to the same coin of evil, right? You have Democrats and Republicans that pass power and outrage back and forth to enable one to get rid of the things that those supporters feel is important because their arch patriot is taking care of those, right? So it takes a Republican to get rid of gun rights and free speech. That was one of the things I recognized, that this isn't, this is a larger operation to remove media institutions, starting with Julian Assange and going down and crumbling from there. So that was what had like set the stage for me to do it, to already have that like preconceived thought, because just me as an activist, I interact with people that believed those things, right? Like, I was on the boards talking to people. I was in the comments of YouTubers that were making videos about it saying like, hey, what about this? Like, hey, please look at this. Like, this isn't what you think it is. Just trying to get information out there. And then once they arrested Julian, I was like, this is enough. Like, I can't not organize in a way that will preserve press freedom and save Julian from these charges. Because it's personally, it's as much for me about Julian as a person as it is Julian a symbol of representing free speech, because like everyone should be afforded these rights and like everyone essentially agrees with that. Like, but seeing a human have to suffer in that way in defense of them is a whole nother thing, because I had been influenced by WikiLeaks all the way back to when I was just out of high school when Collateral Murder came out. That was like the thing that set my political compass.
That changed my life.
Like anywhere near aware of the world as I am now, but every political election, the question in my head is like, okay, but what are they doing about the war criminals? Like, who's caring about that? Like, where is that issue being picked up from? And we live in a world right now where no one cares about the war criminals. Like, everyone wants to love and support them and not depose
them.
Unless it's Putin. That's why. Right. That's why I think the George Bush slip up is so important, right? Because
I loved it.
It gave people a mechanism to say, hey, look at this scumbag. Like, look at the world that has happened since then.
Yes.
But with the connection that people didn't use from that was Julian. Like, right? Like, they didn't say, hey, look at George Bush, this scumbag. Now look at this video that was released. Look at these documents from that time that were released. And look at the man who is suffering because he released those, and look at the man who is free.
Yes. I did that on Twitter. I tried, Andrew, because you're right. Nobody made that connection. Well, it was very frustrating. Yeah.
Well, it's hard to do because of how intimate you have to be to the issue to understand. Like,
I know
everyone wants to end the war in Yemen, right? But what most people don't even realize, the major reason the public knows that war exists is because of those documents from 2010.
Yeah.
Right. It's where we learn that the prince or president or prime or whatever the fuck they call him, the leader of Yemen, sold his people to Saudi Arabia. He said, no, this is cool.
Yeah.
Like, we'll do this. And he was getting rewards from them for it. And then he spoke up some years later and said, hey, we need to stop this. And the crown prince of Saudi Arabia literally abducted him. He put out a hostage video apologizing, and they released him back to run his country thereafter.
Yeah. No, you're right. There's so many of those examples. If you go to my Twitter and you do like an advanced search for the words, thank you, Julian, there are just a boatload of tweets where I'm thanking him for different releases that have exposed different things. I mean, literally there's stuff in WikiLeaks that we don't even know about yet. That, I mean, honestly, there will be things 20 years from now that something's going to happen. And then we're going to go back and look at WikiLeaks and be like, oh yeah, look right there. We had evidence of this back then. There's so many of those situations. And I'm really glad that you just said that it is about Julian as a human being, because, and I'm guilty of this too. A lot of people, like I will say, you know, it's not just about Julian. We need to focus on the bigger picture. Because I do think that that's the most important aspect of this, because this will forever change the future of press freedom and free speech. And I think that that's the best way to get people to recognize why it's important and why it pertains to them. But you're right. Julian Assange, nobody has done more to expose the crimes and corruption of empire and the crimes and corruption of corporations than Julian Assange. There's nobody else on earth who has exposed more stories and exposed more war crimes than him. And he's never gotten it wrong, ever. He's never had to retract a single word that they've published. That's an unbelievable record. I mean, they're like 15 years old and they've never had to make a retraction. That's crazy good. Nobody mm-hmm. else has that kind of record. And he's, you know, as I've gone through the last 3 years, I have met a lot of people, including members of his family, including people who he has been friends with for decades. And everything I've ever heard any of them say about Julian Assange is that he is a very gentle, very kind, very funny. He is just desperate for truth and justice. Like, that is his whole thing. And so the idea that this man, who put so much on the line, put so much at risk, and has suffered so much to expose these things, is, that everybody just kind of turned their backs on him, is very frustrating to me. Because, you know, and you're right. And it's also very frustrating that somebody like George W. Bush is even free to give a speech where he makes a gaffe and accidentally admits that he's a war criminal out loud. You know what I mean? He shouldn't even be free. He should be in The Hague. The dude should be in The Hague. Julian Assange should be free. There should be statues to Julian Assange. Julian Assange should be giving speeches on foreign policy. George W. Bush should be in prison. You know what I'm saying? And that's what it becomes very frustrating. You know, it's just very frustrating that everybody.
Go ahead. It becomes an omen, right? So, no, you're good.
Yeah.
Look at James O'Keefe with Project Veritas, right? The way that he circulates the news, talks about the indictments that he has going on against him, talks about the FBI raiding his home, like preaches for free speech. Like, and I agree, I believe that he does believe in free speech. And he's done, he released the full unedited audio of Julian calling the Secretary Clinton in the White House and the State Department leading up to the accidental release by a separate Luke Harding. And
I don't think it was accidental.
No, but we'll just use that. But the keys in the book, right? Yeah. So James O'Keefe doesn't talk about Julian. Like, he released that little bit of information leading up in September of 2020, which was good,
which infuriates
people, right?
Yeah. But
how much easier would it be to defeat his case for him to have more unadulterated public support from a larger community of people? If he also embraced that issue, like if he talked about what was happening with Julian, because he's next, right? Like, they're already off of Twitter. And the timetable goes, right, for the United States, if you look at Julian's case and assume everything will move at the same speed, he has a decade from the time that James O'Keefe has a decade from the time that grand jury was open till the time that he will be in a maximum detention facility, unless he's willing to defend Julian. Because if Julian comes here and that legal precedent gets set, the work that James O'Keefe does becomes just as criminal as the work of WikiLeaks. And the same thing for Alex Jones, which is actually like my funnest, the highest dopamine levels throughout my activism has been crashing Alex Jones events. And going there and yelling at Alex Jones about defending Julian. We did it during the period in end of February of 2020, beginning of March, at his emergency Roger Waters free speech event. Me and Steve and a couple others from our group dressed up, went and crashed the event. And we turned it into an Alex Jones rally, or an Alex Jones, a Julian Assange rally. We had Alex Jones on stage chanting Julian's name in front of Michael Flynn Jr., right? And in front of a bunch of other influential right-wing figures. And, like, they would have had conversations about that, about what the hell was going on. There was a time I was actually hanging out with Jason Burmis in D.C. in February or in December of 2021 during the Stop the Steal events and the Trump rallies. And Jason has the videos of it. I don't think he's ever published them because it's probably terrible quality. But he sent me in with a camera to an Alex Jones event when Alex Jones and Millie Weaver were having some bullshit right-wing beef. And in the middle of them screaming at each other, I'm standing in the middle of the crowd with a megaphone yelling, "Free Julian Assange." And there's a handful of people who are trying to stop me from yelling it because I'm interrupting Daddy Jones and Mommy Millie. And then there's a handful of people trying to stop people from stopping me that are yelling about who Julian is. And I'm like, I will break your fucking world if you do not defend this man. But now... Jason Burmis hosts the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show on a regular basis and talks about Julian and talks about these issues. I'm eternally grateful just for everyone that I've met that still pushes this issue forward. Because Alex Jones, the InfoWars now at least talks about the issue, right? Because Julian used to be like their rally cry, like, look at these documents, WikiLeaks, right? But now it's because he's not publishing, which is the whole point of this. It is much harder to get those eyes on him because WikiLeaks isn't leading the free speech charge. And that's actually something I was talking about to someone on Twitter about Elon Musk. Like, because whatever feelings people have about Elon Musk, us Assange people, one of our mottos is there's no such thing as a hero, just heroic action. So, like, someone that could be this terrible individual could do a thing that helps the cause of free speech while still being a terrible person, right?
Right.
And that's what the work of Elon...
I don't think he's going to.
No, I don't either. But that's the work of Elon and Project Veritas, like on Twitter, has put the conversation of free speech in the forefront, but either they willingly won't or aren't brave enough to even utter Julian's name during all of this, right? Like, it's all about free speech. Free speech is Trump coming back to Twitter, but like, when's Julian coming back to Twitter? Because he was the first one of that, of the alternative media figures that were removed.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And what's very frustrating about what you just said is that everybody is willing to use Assange when it's convenient for them. I mean, in 2010, when he released, the collateral murder video, the Iraq and Afghanistan war logs, the Guantanamo files, all of that stuff, liberals loved him. I mean, liberals loved him. He gave a TED talk. He got a standing ovation in a room full of liberals, right? And Republicans hated him. And now liberals hate him because he exposed Queen Hillary. And I have better luck with Republicans. And it's like, can y'all just be consistent? Like, you should just be consistent. This should be something that you stand for in principle all the time, regardless of who it impacts, regardless of whose team it helps. Free speech should be just a consistent principle that you hold. And people don't. There's no consistency on this issue whatsoever. And so, thanks to Jason Burmis, the Alex Jones crew is now talking about it again. But we've experienced this numerous times just in dealing with Action for Assange. We've talked to lots of people in independent media and been like, hey, you should cover this, and they won't do it because it affects their channel. They might get shadow banned, or the algorithm will cut them down. They might lose subscribers or clicks or Patreons or whatever,
it affects the way that people's audience are set to perceive the world, because we live in a hyper-polarized society. It's just the nature of the world we live in, and people still try to act like Trump is the arch patriot, that he's going to save America, and still try to have a brand built around that. So when you approach someone who's screaming about free speech with literally the worst decision of the Trump presidency, and arguably the reason why he is not currently in office, right? Because like the Hunter Biden email laptop, if WikiLeaks would have published it, there would have been nothing anyone could do. It wouldn't have mattered, right? So Trump literally like cut his own balls off by attacking Julian and going after him in this way. And at the very worst, allowing it to happen, right? Doing nothing. Yes. Because if you believe the narrative, the very last decision Donald Trump had to make before walking away was, and this is according to Tucker Carlson and a couple other congressional sources. So I don't believe it because I haven't heard any audio, but it is what the narrative says happened, right?
Right.
Is that Trump sat down with some members of the Senate and they said, if you pardon Julian Assange, we will impeach you and you will not be able to run for another term of president. So Trump literally threw the work of People in Action for Assange and people outside of it, because there's other people independently organizing that aren't our friends, that don't like what we do,
right,
but still organize, right? Which that's mm-hmm. what I have the most respect for. But it literally forced Trump to either split his base by not pardoning Julian, or not be able to run for office again. So he literally put the nails in his own coffin, essentially.
Yes.
Because everyone knew what had happened because of how much noise as a community we were able to make about this issue. Basically showing, like, this is who Trump is. Like, this is what he allows to happen. And preserving preserving his chances of running again so his name can be shouted in a crowd was more important than standing on the issues of free speech. And that's something that I believe a large portion of at least the, like, free thinking, right? Not the, like, anti-ideological, like, I believe this, daddy Trump is daddy no matter what, like the neoconservatives, right? The actual thinking portion of his base, right? The thinking portions of his base and the people that don't have a profit motive aren't going to be there to support him next time, regardless of how he runs or what he runs on, because of that issue.
But why would they be? Why?
Why
would they be? Because this is something that he claimed to care about, and he claimed he was going to fight for. And then the minute that it was going to be, you know, personally inconvenient for him to do so, he folded. So, I mean, if he's going to do that on this issue, which is one of the most important issues on planet Earth, he's going to do that on everything. He's not going to stand up and fight for you. So that's just reality. We have to take another quick break, Andrew. Hang tight for just a couple minutes. We'll be right back with Andrew Smith here on TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
The big legacy media has sought to control the public mind in the primaries for the November midterm elections, but it's now clear from some hysterical whining that the legacy media is fast losing control of the narrative. Analysis by CNN's Ronald Brownstein on the 24th of May is a case in point. The headline of his article is "Election Deniers Want to Control the 2024 Election, and They're Getting Closer." Brownstein runs with the typical legacy media line that former President Donald Trump pushes a discredited lie about rampant fraud in the 2020 presidential election. But he seems shocked that so many GOP candidates expressing this view have been nominated or are seeking nominations for positions with control over election machinery in all five of the states that flipped from supporting Trump in 2016 to Biden in 2020. Expect some more hysterical whining. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
This is it. Your chance to come face to face with a Royal Marines commando. They've set you a mission, so you will need to listen to the following instructions very carefully. Meet at the rendezvous. The Royal Marine Commandos will be there waiting for you. Locate them, talk to them, and learn about what it takes to become a Royal Marines Commando. To find out more details about this secret mission, call 0117-926-0233. Got that? 0117-926-0233. However, you should be aware, complete this mission, and your future missions will be a lot more challenging. Royal Marine Commandos. 99.99% need not apply.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Working group meetings for the WHO pandemic treaty have been taking place behind closed doors. On the 18th of February 2022, the Working Group on Strengthening WHO Preparedness and Response, WGPR, to Health Emergencies, held its seventh meeting. Recommendations were issued, including surveillance systems that would link into each country's national health system, the implementation of universal digital vaccination certificates, and guidelines on how each member country would be paying fees to the World Health Organization, In addition to the annual membership fees, each member country is already paying. It proposed that states' parties should ensure adequate and sustained financing at the national and subnational levels and provide adequate and sustained financing to the WHO Secretariat for its work on preventing, detecting, and responding to disease outbreaks. An international pandemic financing faculty is recommended to raise additional reliable financing for pandemic preparedness and for rapid global finance surge for response in the event of a pandemic. The facility should have the capacity to mobilize long-term 10 to 15-year contributions of approximately $5 to $10 billion per annum to finance ongoing preparedness functions. It will have the ability to disperse up to $50 to $100 billion at short notice by front-loading future commitments in the event of a pandemic declaration.
Show me the studies.
Today's News Talk Radio.
True study. This is safe for adults, much less kids.
TNT Radio.live.
Hello, this is TNT Radio.live, and you are listening to The Misty Winston Show, and I'm joined by Andrew Smith, who is the founder of Action for Assange, of which I am a member. We're buds. We've been organizing together for years now. And okay, so we're up against it, man. Pretty Patel's got the case on her desk. What do you think? I shouldn't giggle, but I have to or I'll die. I'll cry.
So I don't know how much time to give him. Right, because I'm not in Australia, but Albo or Albanese, whatever his name is.
Yeah, Albanese, yeah.
Right, and like my whole thing, I don't want to, like, I have always tried not to seed hope, right? Like I tried to seed courage.
Right.
So I don't think anyone is a good guy, right? I think people can do the right thing in moments where it is necessary and still not be a good person, right? Like I don't even consider myself like a great person, but I know that this issue is like literally the most pivotal thing that we can fight as a society.
Yeah.
So what I hope is that we have a moment of courage from Anthony Albanese in Australia, because the internet hasn't stopped blowing up his Twitter page. There's groups asking people from Australia to call and email. He's spoken in support of Julian, which means like at this stage, nothing. Right. Just because someone has previously supported Julian doesn't mean that they'll do the right thing. And even if he does the right thing, it doesn't mean Purdy Patel will, especially with like AUKUS and all the other like international arms deals going between the UK, the US and Australia right now, and the Five Eyes Security Alliance. But I think it is a moment to fight for. Try to contact Purdy Patel, to contact Anthony Albanese, their offices, the people around them. I personally like to do like beyond rogue activism, like just stuff other people think is stupid and like self-deprecating in a way. But like leading up to the original trial, or not the trial, but the decision in January of 2021, I emailed every city council that had a Department of Justice in it and gave them the I don't sound like a crazy person version of what is happening to Julian and the importance of his case, and then added the caveat of like, hey, there may or may not be a protest, right? So you can even educate people on an extremely local level, and it matters because people know people, right? Like if you are a city councilman in a city that has a Department of Justice, I'm willing to bet at least one of those city council people knows at least one person in the local Department of Justice building that can say, hey, can you look into this for me and tell me what's going on? So I don't think that people can spend their time and energy, and it is important to contact Albanese and Purdy Patel and all of these figures we are given as deciders. But ultimately, the deciding factor is public consciousness of the issue. And then if that is not the deciding factor, whatever comes after that is going to be intense and insane and orchestrated by poor people that can't afford food, that have had their family members disappeared for political views, right? All of the things that happen once free speech goes away. It will be those people that backlash against the system.
And so you're right. It's go ahead.
I was just going to say it's as important to contact your literal local city council about the issue as it is to contact your state representatives, your state Department of Justice, or whatever the hell that's considered. And then federal offices, whether it's here in the US, Australia, the UK, New Zealand, Germany, right? And seed courage amongst people to speak out for these things and educate them. Because, you know, it may not be Anthony Albanese that gets Julian Assange sent home or whatever people are trying to achieve at this point in time. And like, if you look at historical political prisoners, people fight for things and go to jail. Right. That's unfortunately the world that we live in, as grave as it is. And there's times where people are in there for a very long time and the process is garbage and they're being drugged through and tortured throughout it, like Julian is. But that doesn't mean that the voice of a local city council person passing an ordinance that says the city of blah, 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 Idaho supports Julian Assange. And that the city council all signs a letter together and sends it to the Department of Justice as otherly elected officials that are saying, no, stop this from happening. So I think people, change is much easier at a local level, and influencing your local politicians at a local level is way easier than fighting these large national battles, which are important, right? But getting your local situation aware of Julian Assange is as important, if not more, than the large international stage that we're presented at the end of the day, right? The reality that
it goes hand in hand, right? I mean, if you approach your local in your local area, then they help build the demand on a national level. And that's really what it's about, is just helping, like you said. It's like we need mass public pressure. The only way we ever get anything, doesn't matter what it is, the only way we ever get anything done is through mass public pressure. We have to make it politically untenable for them to continue this thing. So if you contact your local area, like your local city council or whatever, and you get them on board, and then you can, it's just growing the movement. I mean, that's what Action for Assange has always been about. Okay. So really quickly, we have 5 minutes left. I want to give people some phone numbers to call. So if you want to call Priti Patel, you can call 020-7035-4848. Again, 020-7035-4848. If that phone number does not work for you, I had some people say they had troubles with that one. You can also try 020-7219-3528. Again, 020-7219-3528. When you call Priti Patel, demand that she deny the extradition request. You can also call the Department of Justice. So there's two lines you can call there. There's the comment line, which is 202-353-1555. Again, that's the Department of Justice comment line, 202-353-1555. You can also call the main switchboard, ask to talk to Attorney General Merrick Garland. You will not get Merrick Garland, but you might get some staffer or something. So you can call 202-514-2000. Again, 202-514-2000. I'm also done with Amnesty International. I have run out of patience. They keep tweeting about how this is such an important case and it's politically motivated and blah, 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 which is great. But you need to designate Julian Assange as a prisoner of conscience. It is absolutely shameful that they have yet to do it. I just had Mohamed Al-Mazi on discussing the ridiculousness of them not designating Julian Assange as a prisoner of conscience. So let's put some pressure on them as well. You can call them at 1-800-266-3789. Again, 1-800-266-3789. You can also email them at AIMember@AIUSA.org. Again, AIMember@AIUSA.org. And just demand that they designate Julian Assange a prisoner of conscience. It is legitimately shameful, shameful that they have not done this yet. Okay, you can also call the White House. Call the White House, demand that the case be dropped against journalist and publisher Julian Assange. You can call 202-456-1111. This is the comment line. It's only open Tuesday through Thursday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Again, that's 202-456-1111. And then you can also call, as we just mentioned, Anthony Albanese. So phone number is, okay, there's two different phone numbers. There's the electorate office, which is 02-9564-3588. Again, that's 02-9564-3588. And you can also call the Parliament House office. at 02-6277-4022. So again, that's 02-6277-4022. And just ask him to, you know, use his newly acquired power to fight for Australian citizen Julian Assange and bring him home. So those are some phone numbers you can call. Also, as Andrew said, get involved locally, go to your local city council meeting or wherever you can go. And as Andrew said, he started off just going around and hanging up flyers. It's that simple. Just go around, hang up flyers. You can grab a poster board and a Sharpie and a sidewalk and you're an instant protest. We just need to get the information out there because we do need that mass public pressure. Okay, Andrew, where can people find you and follow you if they want to?
Well, they can find me on Twitter at Andrew Zygmunt, Z-I-G-M-U-N-D. And we haven't posted in a while, but we'll probably get back to it soon. Action for Assange on YouTube and then A for A on Rockfin or action underscore the number four Assange on Twitter.
Yeah, we've both been on hiatus. Andrew went on hiatus a while back just for personal reasons, just to get, you know, it's a lot. We deal with a lot. I've been on hiatus since I started TNT just because, what?
There was literally a time, like, even leading up, like, to recent events where I couldn't even talk about what was happening to Julian without crying. It was, like, after his, the reports had come out about him having a stroke at the end of 2020, that was, or 2021, that was where I, like, personally had to, like, be like, okay, I can't help anyone right now. I can't even talk about this. I need to find my legs to breathe again. Yeah.
All right. They're going to cut you off. Thanks for coming on, my friend. It was so good to talk to you. And I'll be back tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern with another show. But hang tight. There's more coming up right after this here on TNT Radio.